Are you by any chance enjoying some orange juice with breakfast? If so, drink on. Last year, it seemed to be a dodgy idea, but in 2010, it may just be okay again. Here's Chris Forbes-Ewan, who does research on nutrition with the Defence Science and Technology Organisation in Scottsdale, Tasmania.
In July 2009, David Gillespie made a presentation on Occam's Razor about the effects of fructose consumption on health. To refresh your memory, fructose constitutes one half of sugar, the other half being glucose. So sweet foods such as desserts, cakes, chocolate and other confectionery, and sugar-sweetened beverages such as carbonated soft drinks, sports drinks and so on, contain large quantities of fructose. Fructose is also present in fruit, and especially in fruit juice. In his presentation, David argues that fructose has severe and adverse effects on many aspects of metabolism related to health, leading to the current alarming levels of obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and even some cancers. I've been a professional nutritionist for more than two decades, and I was aware of research results showing some adverse effects on health resulting from high fructose consumption. However, I wasn't aware that, to quote David, it is a miracle that we are not all dead in the face of the incessant fructose doping. David's program was based on his book Sweet Poison. My program today consists of a critique of the ideas he puts forward in his book and his Occam's Razor program. I found that some of his ideas are orthodox, but there is also much that I don't agree with. Starting with the positives, I found Sweet Poison to be very entertaining. It contains gentle humour, plain English descriptions of complex topics, and David has, at least to some extent, made an attempt to base his book on the scientific literature. However, David Gillespie is a lawyer, not a nutritionist or otherwise scientifically qualified writer, and he appears to have adopted a legal approach to his investigation of fructose, an approach that is apparently based on the adversarial nature of the profession of law. He also appears to have appointed himself counsellor for the prosecution. So how well has he compiled his case for the prosecution against fructose? And do his arguments support his conclusion that we should avoid all sweet foods, that is, those containing added sugar and therefore added fructose? Well, I'll start by pointing out that not all his claimed facts are correct. For example, his Occam's Razor program includes the claim that by the year 2000, almost 20% of the average person's daily calorie intake was coming from fructose. However, in Sweet Poison, David states that Australians consume only about two-thirds as much fructose as Americans, and there is clear and consistent evidence from the scientific literature that fructose provides about 8 to 10% of dietary energy intake in the United States. So fructose is probably responsible for about 6% of Australians' total energy intake, not the 20% he claims. This is an important error because, as I will argue later, the effects of fructose on health are likely to depend on how much fructose is consumed. But indicative as they are of sloppy research, factual errors do not disprove David's main thesis. So how convincing is the evidence he advances that added fructose in the diet is harmful at any level and is the major cause of the epidemics of obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease and so on? Sweet Poison contains a description of a critical study, at least critical to his argument, conducted in 1984. According to David, 24 men were divided into two groups of 12. With one group receiving 20% of their energy intake from fructose, the other receiving the same percentage of energy from starch. He states that the study had to be terminated when four of the men in the fructose group developed cardiac problems, ranging from severe tachycardia, his heart rate tripled, to mild heart attacks within the first 11 weeks. This certainly sounds serious, and if true, it would provide strong support for the idea that fructose is indeed a very dangerous substance. But here is what actually happened. The study had a crossover design, that is, each group was to spend 7 weeks on either the high starch diet or the high fructose diet, and then cross over to the other diet for the following 7 weeks. During the 11th week of the study, the week in which it was terminated because of heart problems in four participants, All the participants who were still in the study had experienced at least 3 weeks on each diet. That is, they had all recently been exposed to relatively high intakes of both fructose and starch. This is something that David Gillespie neglects to mention in his book. Further, one of the four participants who experienced heart problems, the one who sustained a myocardial infarction, suffered this while on the starch diet before he had even commenced the fructose diet. So the claim that it was fructose-induced heart problems that caused the study to be prematurely terminated is a complete misinterpretation of the study's findings. Referring to the same study, David's Occam's Razor program includes the claim that no one had been game to try fructose feeding on humans ever since some researchers almost killed a few of their trial participants in the early 80s. This claim is also not correct. From a search of the scientific literature that was by no means exhaustive, in the period between the fructose feeding study David relies on so heavily, but misinterprets, and 2008, the year of publication of Sweet Poison, I found 19 papers on studies involving purposefully feeding humans a fructose-based diet. Perhaps of even more relevance, these 19 studies include two by the same group who had conducted the study David claims had to be terminated because four people suffered severe fructose-related heart problems. If high fructose intakes really had led to severe heart conditions, why would those researchers have continued conducting such dangerous studies? How could they have obtained ethical approval to continue research that had led to life-threatening medical emergencies? The solution to these conundrums is, of course, that the 1984 study did not implicate fructose any more than starch, which David believes is a perfectly safe food. I also found I could divide these 19 studies into seven that clearly identified harmful effects attributable to fructose and 12 that reported either neutral or beneficial health effects. So at the time of publication of Sweet Poison, the evidence did not support David's claim that we can be absolutely certain that fructose is a killer of epidemic proportions. David does make some valid points in both his Occam's Razor program and his book. As one example, he points out that two serves of fruit per day would be an appropriate level of intake. This is consistent with the Australian recommendation on fruit consumption. He also emphasises the value of dietary fibre to human health and points out that physical activity is effective, even crucial, for overall health by promoting mood improvement, combating heart disease, improving sleep quality and enhancing sex life, among other benefits. However, Sweet Poison also contains the advice, don't exercise if your dominant purpose is to lose weight. Let a lack of fructose do that instead. This contrasts strongly with the advice of Australia's peak health body, the National Health and Medical Research Council. For weight control, the NHMRC recommends that, at a minimum, people should put together at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity on most, preferably all days, and, if you can, also enjoy some regular, vigorous activity for extra health and fitness. So David Gillespie hasn't done a good job of providing science-based evidence to support his case for the prosecution in the trial of dietary fructose as a slow poison. Does this mean it would be pointless to follow his advice? Well, perhaps paradoxically, my answer is no. I believe that completely avoiding foods containing added sugar would almost certainly lead to the same positive results David experienced. He lost 40 kilograms of excess body weight. But the same result happens with any restrictive diet. Low carbohydrate, low fat, low sugar, low dual diets all lead to lower food intake and weight loss, at least in the short term. I also wonder how many people would willingly give up for the remainder of their lives chocolate, ice cream, honey, sweet drinks, including fruit juice, and desserts such as apple pie, wine trifle, tiramisu. You can complete your own list of wonderful desserts here, and all other sweet foods. I suspect the appropriate answer is not many. You could even revise the wording of the old joke, will I live any longer if I give up all sweet foods? Possibly, but even if you don't, it will certainly seem longer. After all, there is overwhelming evidence that humans are programmed to like sweet foods. This is believed to have an evolutionary origin. Poisonous plant foods are generally bitter or sour, while sweet foods are usually safe to eat. So what do authoritative nutrition bodies say about the place of sugar in the diet? In their 2004 position statement, the American Dietetic Association advised that all foods can fit into healthful diets, even those high in added sugars. That is, you do not have to avoid all sweet foods, simply limit their intake. In August 2009, the American Heart Foundation released guidelines on safe intakes of added sugars. Their recommended levels are well below current average American intakes, but the American Heart Foundation accepts that there are safe levels of intake of added sugars. Many Australians do eat excessive amounts of sugar and would do themselves and their waistlines a favour by reducing sugar intake. It may be that sugar in beverages is especially undesirable. Consumption of large quantities of sweetened, carbonated soft drinks seems to be particularly implicated in obesity, because it appears that people do not always compensate for the added kilojoules they consume in soft drinks by reducing their intake of other foods. In a paper published in 2009 in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine, many leading nutritionists advocate taxing sugar-sweetened beverages to reduce their intake. So will fructose be proven to be the root of all evil, as claimed by David Gillespie? Well, as the great 20th century Danish physicist Niels Bohr put it, predictions are hard to make, especially about the future. Although it is not conclusive, the evidence in the last couple of years, that is since the publication of Sweet Poison, does suggest that fructose may have a tendency to stimulate rather than satisfy appetite. If this proves to be correct, it could implicate high fructose intake as a major contributor to the obesity epidemic. Recent results also suggest that high fructose intake may increase the risk of conditions such as gout, kidney stones, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, high blood pressure and diabetes, and may also lead to blood lipid profiles associated with greater risk of heart disease. But note that it is high consumption of fructose that is implicated in these problems. The 16th century physician Paracelsus is credited with being the first person to point out that there are no such things as poisons, only poisonous doses. That is, anything is harmful if taken in excess, and nothing is harmful if the dose is small enough. This applies equally to fructose as it does to anything else. The evidence to date suggests that in moderate doses, fructose may actually be beneficial for public health, while in large doses it is very likely harmful. This is in stark contrast to David Gillespie's conclusion that every day that fructose remains a part of our diet is a death sentence for thousands of Australians, and his call to immediately ban added fructose as a food. The cause or causes of the obesity epidemic remain unknown. I still believe that to reduce your risk of obesity, the best advice is to follow the dietary guidelines for Australians. In the context of this talk, the two most relevant guidelines are consume only moderate amounts of sugars and foods containing added sugars, and prevent weight gain, be physically active and eat according to your energy needs.
Good advice for the too festive season. Chris Forbes-Ewan in Scottsdale, Tasmania. He's with the Defence Science and Technology Organisation. Next week to Brisbane, where Professor Mark Dodson is Professor of Innovation. I'm Robin Williams.
We trust you've enjoyed this ABC Radio National podcast. Head back to our website to find a range of programs you might also find of interest, including the history program Rear Vision. In today's information age, we know when things happen almost immediately, but often we don't understand why. Rear Vision attempts to change this by presenting contemporary news and current affairs events in their historical context, both informative and engaging. You can find Rear Vision to stream or download at the Radio National website.